Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 937. The Troop and Contrabanda, part 11, Settling In. The Underground Reich Comes into Plain View, part 4. This is being recorded on December 7th of the year 2016. Well, today, December 7th, is, of course, Pearl Harbor Day. It is the day on which Americans remember or memorialize the sneak attack on Pearl Harbor that signaled America's entry into World War II. It is interesting that, this program is being recorded on this day, and recent events have, I think, demonstrated very conclusively just how decisively the U.S. lost the Second World War. It did not lose it on the battlefield, but as Karl von Clausewitz, the famous Prussian military theoretician, theorized, the post-war, which von Clausewitz saw as fundamental to the entire concept of war, was lost very decisively by the U.S. and the Allies. Indeed, there is a, by now, dated joke that was extant when Richard Nixon was president of the U.S. It said, it's a good thing we didn't lose World War II. Otherwise, all of our officials would be named Schultz, Weinberger, and Kissinger, and everyone would be driving Japanese and German cars. Well, yes, indeed. Good thing we didn't lose World War II. Of course, Caspar Weinberger and George Shultz and Henry Kissinger were key members of Richard Nixon's campaign. Weinberger and Shultz also figured prominently in Ronald Reagan's cabinet, as did Alexander Haig, his first Secretary of State, and a fellow who was Chief of Staff under Richard Nixon. And today, December 7th, Shinzo Abe, the Prime Minister of Japan, and the grandson of Nobusuke Kishi, who signed the Japanese Declaration of War against the U.S., is, or I guess by now, has visited Hawaii with President Obama. Nobusuke Kishi was Japan's first prime minister and a war criminal, having shared a prison cell in Sagamo Prison with none other than Yoshio Kodama. Yoshio Kodama, a key official with the Unification Church, and the CIA's man in Japan, primarily, the main CIA officer in Japan. It was Kodama whom, as we looked at in For the Record 291, started the Kodama Fund, which used drug trafficking and other organized crime activities in China, among other places, to help fund the Imperial Japanese Naval Air Arm. He founded that, by the way, on the day Pearl Harbor was attacked. That was December 8th at that point in Japan. Japan is on the other side of the international dateline. I would note that Shinzo Abe is proposing to tear up the pacifist nature of the Japanese Constitution and greatly expanding Japanese military expenditures. Taro Azo, the finance minister and vice prime minister, is an ardent adherent to Nazi political theory, as is a woman named Tomi Inada, who is the new defense minister of Japan. She is also someone who was the the Minister of Cool Japan. That is a strategy that seeks to market Japan as hip to the world's population. The Pokemon Go game and its global, wild global popularity is seen by the Cool Japan advocates, including Tomi Inada, as vindication of or manifestation of the Cool Japan strategy, which was overseen by her. It also was marketed originally by a company called Niantic, and that was capitalized by InQtel, which is the CIA's venture capital arm. Eventually, that was bought out by Google. So, with Donald Trump proposing to perhaps unleash Japan, so to speak, and let it develop nuclear weapons, things are right on course. In this program, I'm going to use something that I hope perhaps in the future will make things a little more comprehensible to many listeners. I realize that I use an incredibly pedantic format in this program. With America so thoroughly dumbed down and with just completely whacked out journalistic concepts, including wild-eyed conspiracy theories, getting a lot of play and then being lumped in by the mainstream media with credible information, such as some of the credible and verifiable information about the JFK assassination, I think waxing scholarly, to coin a term, is important. And do note again that every For the Record program is accompanied on the SpitfireList.com website by a long article-length written description. In this program, I'm going to attempt to not only make citations, but perhaps present summaries and encapsulations of some information rather than reading at great length. I've just concluded a series of programs about the book, or really featuring the book, The Making of Donald Trump by David K. Johnston. I would recommend that. I read at length from the book. Originally, I was planning on reading that book into the record almost in its entirety, but I think due to the pressing nature of events, I'm going to move on back into the more hard-hitting anti-fascist analysis that I have been presenting for 37-plus years. However, I will be making citations in the program and reading some excerpts to be sure, but I'm going to try to make things a little more comprehensible by summing up things that will have long text excerpts in the actual description of the program. I think, well, before I begin, this program is subtitled The Underground Reich Comes into Plain View, Part 4. And I mean that quite literally. I think that some people may think that when I use the term Underground Reich, I am somehow engaging in an empty rhetorical flourish or using deliberate hyperbole for something or using a metaphor. Sadly, not. I mean and have meant the term Underground Reich quite literally, as exemplified in, among other texts, the book The Nazis Go Underground, authored by Kurt Ries and published in 1944. The Third Reich did indeed go underground and used its profound connections with the transnational corporate community and its intelligence and national security establishments, connections to those of other countries in the post-war period to perpetuate itself. It also used traditional German Ostpolitik, as set forth primarily in, for the record, 918, to promote and enhance those tactics. Well, at some point, it stood to reason that the underground Reich would indeed come into plain view, and that is now happening, because whereas the Republican Party and much of the CIA had served as de facto vehicles for the underground Reich, now, with Donald Trump having acceded to the presidency, adding a whole new and brutally literal level of meaning to the term White House. Perhaps I should call it the White House, H-A-U-S. The underground Reich is indeed coming into plain view. We have spoken most recently in For the Record 931 about Steve Bannon, the head of the Breitbart blog and a key exemplar of what has been euphemized as the alt-right. Leave it to the U.S. with its obsession with political correctness to come up with a euphemism for fascism, and our journalists are going along with that, predictably, frankly. If Hitler came to power today, our media would be handling it like this. The German paleoconservative Adolf Hitler, whose populist alt-right followers are accused by critics of pursuing an ultra-nationalist agenda, and that's how they would phrase it. They won't use the F-word, fascist, and they sure as bloody hell won't use the N-word, Nazi. I don't like the term neo-Nazi either. They're not neo-Nazis. They are Nazis, and they are just the next generation. And again, I just don't like the term neo-Nazi. I think it's a bad one. I like to call them Nazis. That's what they are, and I think a great many of them, I suspect, will be quite proud of, not only, well, they're certainly proud of being what they are, and I think they would agree that, with my analysis, that the use of the term neo-Nazi is really inappropriate.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
For those who think that my discussion of the underground Reich was, well, you know, there goes Dave Emigan. He thinks everybody's a Nazi. Keeps talking about the underground Reich. Well, dude, you know, like, wow. Yep. Try this on for size. From The Atlantic of November 21st of 2016. Hail Trump, white nationalists, salute the president-elect by Daniel Lambroso, L-A-M-B-R-O-S-O, and Yoni Y-O-N-I Applebaum, A-P-P-L-E-B-A-U-M. Hail Trump, hail our people, hail victory. That's how Richard B. Spencer saluted more than 200 attendees on Saturday, gathered at the Ronald Reagan Building in Washington, D.C. for the annual conference of the National Policy Institute, which describes itself as, quote, an independent organization dedicated to the heritage, identity, and future of people of European descent in the United States and around the world. More about that meeting. This from the New York Times of November 20th, the 2016 article by Joseph Goldstein, G-O-L-D-S-T-E-I-N. alt-right exults in Trump's election with a salute. Heil victory. That's what Sieg Heil means in German. And speaking again of Richard B. Spencer, who saluted the followers at that gathering, he railed against Jews and, with a smile, quoted Nazi propaganda in the original German. America, he said, belonged to white people, whom he called the children of the sun, a race of conquerors and creators who had been marginalized, but now in the era of President-elect Donald J. Trump, were, quote, awakening to their own identity, unquote. And skipping down and sounding a major focal point of this broadcast, which is the media and information, Mr. Spencer's after-dinner speech began with a polemic against the mainstream media, unquote, before he briefly paused. Perhaps we should refer to them in the original German, he said. The audience immediately screamed back, Lügenpresse, reviving a Nazi-era word that means lying press, unquote. Mr. Spencer suggested that the news media had been critical of Mr. Trump throughout the campaign in order to protect Jewish interests, unquote. One wonders if these people are people at all or instead soulless Gollum, he said, referring to a Jewish fable about the Gollum, a clay giant that a rabbi brings to life to protect the Jews. And skipping down again, Mr. Trump's election, Mr. Spencer said, was the victory of the will, a phrase that echoed the title of the most famous Nazi-era propaganda film. And speaking of Steve Bannon, now the top White House advisor, from CBS News of November 19th of 2016, Steve Bannon speaks out on white nationalism and Donald Trump agenda. The term Nazi stems from National Socialist, which is what the Nazis called themselves. Steve Bannon is calling himself an economic nationalist. Skipping down in this. I'm not a white nationalist. I'm a nationalist. I'm an economic nationalist, not a national socialist, an economic nationalist. Bannon told the news outlet earlier this week. The globalists gutted the American working class and created a middle class in Asia. The issue now is about Americans looking to not get effed over, unquote. It will be as exciting as the 1930s, greater than the Reagan Revolution. One more time. It will be as exciting as the 1930s. Yeah, the 1930s world were pretty exciting. It will be as exciting as the 1930s, greater than the Reagan Revolution. Conservatives plus populists in an economic nationalist movement. Bannon, in the Hollywood Reporter interview, also gave some insight into how he viewed his political foes, presumably liberals and the media, and the darkness he touts in fighting them. Darkness is good, Bannon said. Dick Cheney, Darth Vader, Satan, that's power. It only helps us when they get it wrong, when they're blind to who we are and what we're doing. Yes, indeedy. It does help them. We're going to be talking about the media and pressure on the media. Donald Trump has been blasting the media, and indeed the use of social media and the generation of fake news, not just by the social media, but stories circulated via WikiLeaks talking about opponents of Hillary Clinton in the Democratic Party being assassinated, and that then gets play in the social media with Julian Assange working directly with Roger Stone, the dirty tricks specialist of the Trump campaign. Roger Stone, a veteran of the Watergate dirty tricks squad under Richard Nixon, a man who touted the third-party candidacy of John Anderson in 1980, thereby helping Ronald Reagan get elected, and a man who also helped to dredge up the candidacy of Gary Johnson, a libertarian whose libertarian, unquote, agenda involved bringing Wackenhut into the prison system in New Mexico, I guess, that could be considered liberty if you're not one of the inmates, perhaps. Wackenhut, the private security agency that has functioned as a cat's paw for the U.S. intelligence community over the years. Its chief counsel was William Kesey in the Reagan years. And we will talk about Gary Johnson at some point in the future. This campaign made not only fake news, but the use of social media, well, it put them in an arena in which they were a dominant factor. There is a post in the Food for Thought section of the SpitfireList.com website. It is on the front page. I will link to it in the written description for the record 937. One of the outfits that has been very supportive of WikiLeaks, and also Edward Snowden, which is a really interesting contradiction. WikiLeaks, aside from its fascist political connections, and it is a fascist network, what they are from a legal and conceptual standpoint is a bunch of criminals. What they do is they hack into databases and people's email accounts. That is a federal offense. It's like it's a form of mail tampering. In the old Western, one of the things the outlaws would always do is stick up the mail train. And then I've spoken about the fascist connections of WikiLeaks, which are legion, in, among other shows, for the record, 725, 732, 745, 755, and 917. You heard Steve Bannon talking about Dick Cheney, and he being one of the embodiments of darkness. It is interesting that he thought that Dick Cheney, Darth Vader, and Satan. Yeah, well, not a bad grouping. That one of the founder of the Electronic Freedom Foundation, a lyricist for the Grateful Dead, a fellow who was Dick Cheney's campaign manager and who also voted for George Wallace in 1968, is a fellow named John Perry Barlow. And there is a remarkable article from Forbes magazine of 2002 in which Barlow describes having been invited to CIA headquarters, where he made a number of proposals to the CIA, and his proposals for the development of open source electronic media networks sounds very much like the conceptual foreshadowing of the development of social media. And we're going to be, I will link to that, and there will be some rumination about that in the description for the record, 937.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
When people who write for the New York Times begin to realize what is going on, well, you know it is pretty late in the day. The New York Times of November 21st of 2016, a column, an op-ed column by Charles Blow, B-L-O-W, Making America White Again. And it begins, "This may well be the beginning of the end, the early moments of an historical pivot point when the slide of the Republic into something untoward and unrecognizable still feels like a small collection of poor judgments and reversible decisions, rather than the forward edge of an enormous menace inching its way forward and grinding up that which we held dear and foolishly thought, as lovers do, would ever endure." Well, he has that right. It really is not the beginning of the end. One could cite a number of possibilities there. I would say November 22nd, 1963 was the beginning of the end, when this country and its institutions failed to take account of what was really happening. That was the beginning of the end. And the New York Times published the goddamn Warren Report. So if they're shocked, they should understand that, in a sense, as I said at the end of For the Record 894, if they're shocked at the Trump machine, the Trump manifestation is, "They're your winnings, sirs," to paraphrase Inspector Renault. And again, Charles Blow has it right here. "This may well be the beginning of the end, the early moments of an historical pivot point when the slide of a republic into something untoward and unrecognizable still feels like a small collection of poor judgments and reversible decisions, rather than the forward edge of an enormous menace inching its way forward and grinding up that which we held dear and foolishly thought, as lovers do, would ever endure." Well, this is an enormous menace. It's not inching its way forward. It has been doing that for a long time, but it is bloody well going to grind up that which we held dear, including, I would say, ultimately, most of you individual listeners. Because, indeed, the underground Reich has come back up over ground, and things are going to take place as I have long forecast. In 200 years, I would say, at the most, I don't think it's going to take that long, because I don't think a lot of people, most people will still be alive, but Adolf Hitler's birthday will be celebrated as an international holiday. And the way he will be represented is, yep, he was a little extreme, but he was just trying to save Germany from the international Jewish conspiracy. If only people in America had done that, then Washington and or New York and or other cities wouldn't have been hit by cyber terrorist attacks that destroyed America. America didn't act in time, if that's what happens. Something along those lines. That will be, well, Hitler tried to save Germany from what happened to America. When I talk about, when I update my coverage of the ascension of the fascist element in the Zionist movement, I will hopefully bring that into clearer focus. Talking about some of the appointments that Trump has made, he's appointed people like Steve Mnuchin and some very interesting people from Wall Street to key economic positions. His national security advisor is going to be General Michael Flynn. And from Charles Blow's column, in October, Flynn tweeted, "Follow Mike at Cernovich. He has a terrific book, Guerrilla Mindset, well worth the read." The New Yorker dubbed Mike Cernovich the meme mastermind of the alt-right in a lengthy profile. The magazine pointed out, On his blog, Cernovich developed a theory of white male identity politics. Men were oppressed by feminism, and political correctness prevented the discussion of obvious truths, such as the criminal proclivities of certain ethnic groups. And then talking about Jeff Sessions, the attorney general appointee. Not all of Sessions' issues regarding minorities have a 30-year vintage. In response to the attorney general announcement, the Southern Poverty Law Center issued a statement that read in part, "But we cannot support his, Sessions, nomination to be the country's next attorney general. Senator Sessions has not only been a leading opponent of sensible, comprehensive immigration reform, he has associated with anti-immigrant groups we consider to be deeply racist, including the Federation for American Immigration Reform and the Center for Security Policy." Indeed, Fair was quick to congratulate Sessions on his nomination Friday, saying in a statement, "It's hard to imagine a better pick for the attorney general position than Senator Jeff Sessions." The group called on Sessions to rid the country of sanctuary cities. The Southern Poverty Law Center has written about Fair, saying, quote, "Fair leaders have ties to white supremacist groups and eugenicists and have made many racist statements. Its advertisements have been rejected because of racist content." Fair's founder, John Taunton, has expressed his wish that America remain a majority white population, a goal to be achieved presumably by limiting the number of non-whites who enter the country. One of the organizations that is deeply involved with Fair is an organization called the Pioneer Fund. The Pioneer Fund is an American eugenics organization that supported the eugenics programs of Adolf Hitler. And, well, here it is manifesting in terms of the attorney general appointee. I would point out that in our discussions with Peter Lavenda, we have spoken about immigrants and the suspicions of immigrants and how that led people to turn to fascism. And it's happening right now. Some of the interesting appointments of Donald Trump, he has appointed General John Mattis, a former Marine Corps general, to be defense secretary. And although Mattis has gotten good press, I think in a way a key to understanding Mattis is that he wants, according to media reports, he wants General Petraeus to be the Secretary of State. Trump has nominated the former Marine Corps General John Kelly to be head of the Department of Homeland Security. That would make the Defense Secretary, the head of Homeland Security, and the National Security Advisor to be generals who were critical of Obama and who, of course, despise Hillary Clinton. One of the keys about Petraeus, I think, there was an article in the New York Times that if he were to be nominated for Secretary of State, that would make basically defense, Homeland Security, and State headed by generals, as well as Flynn, the National Security Advisor, with big Wall Street people heading up departments dealing with economics and basically white supremacists heading up the Department of Justice. We are in for a really good time. That New York Times article mentioned that if Petraeus gets nominated to be Secretary of State, it remains to be seen if that happens, but he would have to vet his nomination with his parole officer, which, that speaks for itself. I have put into the written description for the program a couple of articles, including some that are incorporated into a comment that was posted by Terrafractalus, Terrafractyl, a contributing editor to the SpitfireList.com blog, about false news and some of the derivatives of some of the false news that have a lot of distribution during the campaign. And again, it is interesting to contemplate the role of John Perry Barlow in the possible genesis of social media in that meeting at CIA headquarters. It's also, again, interesting. The EFF has been a big supporter of WikiLeaks and Edward Snowden. It is wild to see the people supporting WikiLeaks then repositioning themselves seamlessly as, quote, privacy advocates, unquote, as we looked at in For the Records 891 and 895. The so-called privacy advocacy milieu is peopled by people with strong connections to CIA spinoff organizations. If you're in favor of WikiLeaks, you cannot position yourself as a privacy advocate. I'm sorry. I mean, that's like getting stinking drunk and going to a temperance meeting. It doesn't compute, but in our idiot society, it does compute. The Charles Blow column noted that just as Donald Trump is a big Twitter fan, Michael Flynn, the new national security advisor, has also been a big fan of Twitter, and that has been used to disseminate false news. A McClatchy D.C. article by Hannah, H-A-N-N-A-H, Allum, A-L-L-U-M, from December 5th of 2016. Conspiracy peddlers continue pushing debunked Pizzagate tale. And this talks about the fact that one of the false news stories that got a lot of gravitas due to social media and right-wing social media in particular, and also right-wing online media, was the Pizzagate connection that maintained that a Washington, D.C. pizza restaurant was being used by Hillary Clinton in a child trafficking, child sex operation. A guy showed up at that pizza restaurant from North Carolina to investigate that and fired a shot from a rifle. He was then arrested. And this article makes the point that not only Trump, but a great many people in his cabinet are very supportive of the false news. Indeed, Michael Flynn's son, Michael Flynn Jr., who was part of the Trump transition team and apparently had a government email address, not only defended his father's dissemination of that, but also pointed out or opined that any news story should be assumed to be true until it is proven false. Mark Twain observed that a lie can travel halfway around the world before the truth has a chance to put its boots on. Well, that's, he would be absolutely out of his mind today, because that has gone completely overboard. The appointee by Donald Trump to head up the CIA is a Koch brothers protege named Mike Pompeo of Kansas. He is the pick for CIA director, and he has been a proponent of Hillary Clinton running a gun-running operation out of the U.S. Embassy in Benghazi, Libya. That does not bode well. Pompeo is a very bright guy. He was first in his class at West Point. He also was a tank officer in Germany during the closing stages of the Cold War. One thing we will talk about in weeks to come, perhaps in our next show, is how the Bormann Group was using U.S. officers stationed in Germany and basically hooking them up economically as a way of building a Nazi fifth column within the U.S. military. Of course, Steve Bannon is a big fan, of false news with his Breitbart, although he would claim it was accurate. There are basically two Hillary Clinton is trafficking in, or the Clintons are trafficking in, satanic rituals involving children and things of that kind. Michael Flynn Jr. defended his father, saying that it really was not the Pizzagate theme or meme that his father was advocating, but rather something that is called the spirit cooking meme. And this involved, again, Hillary Clinton and the Clintons involved in satanic child sex things and so forth. Now, this particular meme has been promoted by none other, and again, all of this is in the description for the record 937 with links, by none other than Eric Prince. Eric Prince was the founder and head of the Blackwater, or whatever it's called now, but the former Blackwater mercenary organization, which functioned as a proxy for the national security establishment in many areas, including the Middle East. And it is an organization that uses some of the very formidable special operations troops, former Army Rangers, particularly Green Beret, former Navy SEALs, and others. Those are very, very formidable warriors indeed. And when you put them to work for a private interest, in particular a far right-wing private interest like Blackwater, you are in trouble. Eric Prince has a nonprofit he called the Freiheit Foundation, that is freedom in Germany. And it was Eric Prince who came up with the spirit cooking meme that was adhered to by Michael Flynn and defended by his son and apparent advisor, Michael Flynn Jr. I would note that Eric Prince's brother is Betsy DeVos. She has been appointed as education secretary. She married into the very right-wing Michigan DeVos family that heads up Amway. And I would also note that the fellow who ultimately became head of the parent company of Blackwater was Joseph E. Schmitz of the right-wing California Schmitz family. He is the apparently anti-Semitic advisor to Donald Trump, who was the inspector general for the Pentagon and was described by a former Pentagon official as obsessed with, quote, all things German and all things Steuben. We talked about that in For the Record 918, 919, and 920. I suspect he had much to do with the manifestations by Donald Trump of what I have described as German Ostpolitik. Something to bear in mind is that the dissemination of fake news is to be, and this is something very much favored by the Trump administration, is to be weighed against an overt attempt by the Trump administration to discredit and or muzzle the mainstream media. In the New York Times Magazine of November 27th of 2016, that was in the West Coast edition, it was in other editions of the Times, in East Coast version, there was an article, Stop the Presses, by Emily Bazelon, B-A-Z-E-L-O-N, and it notes, skipping down, as a candidate, Trump blustered vaguely that he wanted to, quote, open up our libel laws, unquote. And this article deals with Donald Trump and a number of other billionaires using litigation to try to muzzle the media. And in that context, I would note another New York Times article, appropriately enough, from the November 22nd, 2016 edition of the Times by Michael M. Greenbaum, G-R-Y-N-B-A-U-M, and Sidney Ember, S-Y-D-M-E-Y-E-M-B-E-R. Trump calls TV figures to a private meeting and lets them have it, unquote. Mr. Trump, whose antagonism toward the news media was unusual even for a modern presidential candidate, described the television networks as dishonest in their reporting and short-sighted in missing the signs of his upset victory. He criticized some in the room by name, including CNN's President Jeffrey A. Zucker, according to multiple people briefed on the meeting who were granted anonymity to describe confidential discussions. It's not unusual for journalists to agree to off-the-record sessions with prominent politicians, including President Obama, as a way to gain insights and develop relationships. But after details of Mr. Trump's heckling leaked on Monday in the New York Post, it seemed the meeting was being used as a political prop, especially after Trump-friendly news outlets trumpeted the session as a take-no-prisoners move by a brave president-elect. Trump slams media elite face-to-face, Blair the Drudge report. Trump eats press, wrote Breitbart News. This is to be considered against the background of people like Richard Spencer and his followers talking about the Lügenpresse, the lying press. And also, especially, Donald Trump is going to be appointing a number of Supreme Court justices and appellate judges as well. And with the right wing, very, very right wing hell, with the fascists, the alt-right, excuse me, how politically incorrect of me, the alt-right, are poised to implement their agenda, it is a safe bet that billionaires will be filing lawsuits and there will be various legal motions to change American law vis-a-vis the free press. Again, Trump wants to open up our libel laws, the idea being to muzzle a free press. And it won't just be the use of fake news and the trafficking of BS, frankly, to do that, but also the appointment of judges, federal judges at both the appellate and Supreme Court levels, who will back just that. And I would note, too, that it won't just be the media that are going to be intimidated. Shortly after Trump's election, there was a professor watch list circulated online by a conservative youth group known as Turning Point USA. From the New York Times of December 4th, 2016, "I Am a Dangerous Professor" by George Yancey, Y-A-N-C-Y. He is a professor, an African-American professor, at Emory University in Georgia. By the way, there is no relation. This reads in part, "Those familiar with George Orwell's 1984 will recall that, quote, Newspeak was designed not to extend but to diminish the range of thought, unquote. I recently felt the weight of this Orwellian ethos when many of my students sent emails to inform me and perhaps warn me that my name appears on the professor watch list, a new website created by a conservative youth group known as Turning Point USA. One of the things that comes to mind in this context, aside from the fact that simply doing that will intimidate many teachers into, well, shall we say, doctoring their syllabus for their classes, in places like Texas, it is now legal for students to come to class sporting or bringing guns openly. Open carry laws have now been extended in the state of Texas to permit students. I believe it's college students, it may be high school students, I'm not sure, but certainly college students can come to class with guns on their hip. If you when one considers things like the professor watch list in combination with college students who can come to class with guns, that is not only going to be intimidating, but I will predict down the line X number of students will basically take it upon themselves to begin eliminating some of these dangerous professors. It's going to add a whole new level of meaning to the Texas School Book Depository. Now, the Texas School Book Depository is going to become the city morgue at the rate we're going.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
Another interesting thing to contemplate in that regard, there has been a fair amount of coverage of this, but not nearly enough. And I'm going to use something from the Daily Mail from the UK. This one, however, happened right here in the South Bay at Mountain View High School. From the Daily Mail of November 16th of 2016, by Khalida Rahman, R-A-M-A-N, a teacher who compared Trump's rise to Hitler is suspended from high school to keep students emotionally safe, unquote. A California teacher has been suspended with pay from the school he has worked for 40 years for comparing Donald Trump's rise to power to Adolf Hitler's. Frank Navarro, N-A-V as in Victor A-R-R-O, a scholar of the Holocaust who has worked for decades at Mountain View High School, said he taught his World Studies class the similarities between Hitler's rise to power and Trump's campaign. But after concerned parents began contacting the school, Principal Dave Grissom and Superintendent Jeff Harding, H-A-R-D-I-N-G, made the decision to suspend Navarro. Navarro said the parent claims he called Trump and Hitler one and the same, but he says that's not what happened. This parent said that I had said Donald Trump was Hitler, but I would never say that. That sloppy historical thinking, unquote, Navarro told SFGate. He says he did make comparisons about how the two rose to prominence and lead their respective nations, including rhetoric about deporting foreigners and restoring greatness to the country. It makes sense. It's factual. It's evidence-based. It reminds students that history is real, Navarro said. But the school officials said, given the climate following the election, the lesson was inappropriate. Skipping down. Navarro said it is his duty as a history teacher to ensure students are aware of bigotry and to point it out, according to a Change.org petition. I feel strongly about this. To stand quiet in the face of bigotry and to turn your eyes away from it is to back up the bigotry, and that's not what I or any history teacher should be doing in our work, unquote. If he were a college professor, I suspect he would be on the dangerous professor's watch list. And good thing he isn't living in Texas. Of course, a student could always bring a gun to class now, couldn't they? The muzzling of Frank Navarro, I think, stands in marked contrast to something else that involves fascism and free speech. From the Seattle Times of November 17th of 2016, U.S. says anti-Nazi resolution at UN restricts free speech. This by Michael Astor, A-S-T-O-R. The United States was one of three countries to vote against a UN resolution condemning the glorification of Nazism on Thursday, citing freedom of speech issues and concerns Russia was using it to carry out political attacks against its neighbors. the resolution entitled Combating Glorification of Nazism, Neo-Nazism, and Other Practices That Contribute to Fueling Contemporary Forms of Racism, Racial Discrimination, Xenophobia, and Related Intolerance, was approved by the UN's Human Rights Committee on Friday with 131 in favor, 3, including the U.S., against, and 48 abstentions. Ukraine and Palau were the other no votes. Well, in Ukraine, the overtly celebratory heirs to the fascist OUNB Nazi collaborators are in power. Their top military unit, the Azov Battalion, sports the swastika and the SS moon on their combat helmets. The spokesman for the Azov Battalion is a fellow named Roman Zvarych, Z-R-S-V-A-R-Y-C-H. He was the personal secretary in the early 1980s to Yaroslav Stetsko. Stetsko was the wartime leader of the Nazi collaborationist government in Ukraine under the OUNB. This is the second time that the U.S. has voted against that U.N. resolution, saying, well, to condemn Nazism and neo-Nazism is a restriction of free speech. That stands in marked contrast to Frank Navarro. By the way, Corey Lewandowski, the former campaign manager for Donald Trump, has stated that the executive editor for the New York Times should be put in jail. Signs of the times. And again, I think many people have thought that when I talked about the Underground Reich, I was speaking figuratively. I'm going to end the program as I began it. The Atlantic, November 21st of 2016. Hail Trump, white nationalists, salute the president-elect. Hail Trump, hail our people, hail victory. And from the New York Times of November 20th of 2016 by Joseph Goldstein, alt-right exults in Trump's election with a salute. Heil victory. Spencer railed against Jews and with a smile quoted Nazi propaganda in the original German. America, he said, belonged to white people whom he called the children of the sun, a race of conquerors and creators who had been marginalized, but now, in the era of President-elect Donald J. Trump, were awakening to their own identity. Mr. Spencer's after-dinner speech began with a polemic against the mainstream media before he briefly paused. Perhaps we should refer to them in the original German, he said. The audience immediately screamed back, Lügenpresse, reviving a Nazi-era word that means lying press. Mr. Spencer suggested that the news media had been critical of Mr. Trump throughout the campaign in order to protect Jewish interests. And again, top White House advisor Steve Bannon, as quoted in CBS News on November 19th of 2016 by Rena Flores, it will be as exciting as the 1930s. Yes, it will. And if you don't get as enough excitement for your taste in the 1930s, well, be patient, because the 1930s will be followed by the 1940s, and they will prove very exciting indeed. This concludes For the Record program number 937, The Trip and Confabanda, Part 11, Settling In, The Underground Reich Comes into Plain View, Part 4. This is being recorded on December 7th. Of 2016. Happy Pearl Harbor Day. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.